This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Shanning and Julian. Now, in about half an hour, we're going to be speaking with Lim Wei Jiat, constitutional lawyer, on the role of a deputy prime minister. But in the meantime, we're taking a look at Malaysia's new cabinet. Now, we are running a poll this morning on the BFM Twitter account, asking you what do you think of the new cabinet. So far, we've had about 126 votes. 50% have voted for wait and see. Another 32% said then not much in favour. 9% said it's okay. 8% said they are positive on it. Do continue to let us know what you think. The new cabinet is in all of the papers this morning after Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin unveiled it yesterday evening. And notably, it doesn't have a deputy prime minister, but instead four coordinating senior ministers. So this cabinet has 32 ministers and 38 deputy ministers from Bersatu, UMNO, PAS, as well as Gabungan Parti Sarawak.
As well as also independent lawmakers who followed former PKR Deputy President Dato' Sri Azmin Ali out of PKR and a few non-politicians.
Now, Muhyiddin has described this as a functional cabinet that aims to deliver its services in a more focused and effective manner. And to help him do so, he appointed four senior ministers instead of a deputy prime minister, who he says will help him coordinate the affairs related to economy, security, infrastructure development, education and social issues. Now, the four senior ministers are Datuk Sri Muhammad Azmin Ali, who is, of course, also the Minister of International Trade and Industry, Datuk Ismail Sabri Yaakob from UMNO as Minister of Defence, Datuk Sri Fadila Yusof, who's from PBB in Sarawak, as Minister of Works, and Dr. Muhammad Razi Muhammad Jidin Bersatu as Minister of Education.
And some prominent non-political figures that Tan Sri Muhyiddin has brought in include Tengku Zafrul, Tengku Abdul Aziz, the now former CIMB Group CEO, who will be made finance minister after taking his oath as a senator, as well as Federal Territories Mufti, Zulkifli Muhammad Al-Bakri, who will be the minister in charge of religious affairs, also after being made senator. So for more insight into this, this morning we have on the line with us Dr. O. E. Sun, senior fellow at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs. Thank you very much for joining us, E. Sun, and good morning. First things first, what do you make of this overall cabinet?
Well, of course, a lot of people are looking at what is called conspicuous by their absence, namely the absence of slightly controversial figures. This would include those who are sort of mired in various scandals and court cases, such as some of the senior UMNO leaders, as well as, for example, the president of PAS, who has been expressing what for many people will be very extremist statements. So, and then Muhyiddin talked about, bringing in professional people and so on, and the sort of whipping boy for that will, of course, be Tengku Zafru, who is there to show up this sort of claim. So, absence of any other choice, those will be the choices that we are saddled with for the moment.
And interestingly also, Ethan, there is a lack of DPM, and that's presumably replaced by four senior ministers. This is a pretty novel thing for Malaysia. What do you think of this?
Well, I think it serves two purposes for Muhyiddin. Number one is, of course, the absence of a so-called obvious successor would hopefully ward off the kind of what was called internecine power bickerings and so on, as was witnessed during, his own times with Najib when he tried to be prime minister, and, of course, the various sagas associated with Dr. Mahathir and Anwar Ibrahim. So, there's no obvious successor. Number two, of course, various factions within his hastily cobbled together coalition were, of course, gunning for that position. So instead, he sort of diffused that into four, what you call, senior ministers' positions, such that there's no one obvious successor, but the four of them could, they will have hopes, but perhaps they are not, it's not written in stone.
And Isan, what do you make of Tan Sri Muhyiddin's speech, particularly with regard to his choice of words, calling his cabinet a functional one and one that also delivers?
Well, I think that's a very good choice of words indeed. Namely, it's a functional cabinet in the sense that the nation will have to sort of go forward whether or not we like the current political scenario. So you do need to have a cabinet, and you might as well have one as such.
And Isan, just interestingly, the appointment of Tunku Zafro, who isn't a politician, but some sort of a technocrat from CIMB, the private sector, and it doesn't, the finance ministry doesn't have the senior minister status. Is this a good thing, given that we are going through such economic turmoil?
Well, I think the appointment of Tunku Zafro has its precedence in the appointment, if I remember correctly, of Wahid Omar during the Najib administration as some sort of economics planning minister. There will be another banker appointed into a governmental economics or finance-related position. I think Tengku Zafru would have a tough time negotiating the very treacherous political waters at the moment. And of course, there'll be a lot of different demands to be placed upon him by the various factions within the ruling coalition. How to deal with those demands effectively, I think, would already be taken up a lot of his time. So whether he could deliver or not, I think it remains to be seen.
And just to continue on this topic, since we are on finance, you know, there have been some changes to the ministries. For example, like Azmin Ali's old ministry, Ministry of Economic Affairs, now doesn't exist. Instead, there is an economics ministers in the PM's department to be headed by Dato' Sri Mustafa bin Muhammad or Tok Pa. Now, what's the significance of this?
Well, we have to look at what exactly that sort of changes would entail. For example, Azmin's economics ministry used to run all the state-owned enterprises, the so-called government-linked companies and so on. So where do these government-linked companies now go under? Would it be Tok Pa's ministry, or would it be the finance ministry? I think that is the key question, because in the Malaysian economy, the GLCs occupy a significant position. We are talking about, I think, 30 to 40%.
Now, Isan, it's probably still too early, early to tell, but could we see significant policies being unwound, especially with regards to economics, like the GST, for example? I mean, especially now considering the oil price decline that we're seeing, the pressure to reinstate a consumption tax seems more acute.
Well, we already have in place of GST, we have this SST and so on. I think it would be very unwise for Muhyiddin to try to unveil something quite significant, for example, especially on the revenue side, where people might have to pay more taxes, given that his government is not quite a very stable one. And the fact that you have to curry a lot of popular favors.
And Isan, just something about the diversity that is in the newest, the latest cabinet lineup in Malaysia. I mean, in the previous government, you saw a non-Malay finance minister and you saw some females up there as well in the form of Hannah Yeo and Yobin, Teresa Kok and so on. But this is sort of lacking in the current lineup. What do you think about this?
Well, number one, it's a political necessity, because the harsh political fact remains most of the MPs who support this new government, they are Malays. So you have a pool of mostly Malay MPs. So when you are sort of dividing up the various ministerial portfolios, of course, you then have a majority of Malay ministers. In this case, an overwhelming majority. Some might say you can then appoint senators and so on But which Muhyiddin did. But even if you do so by appointing senators to occupy certain positions, well, the various factions in his coalition who are mostly Malay oriented, they would also like to have their people been appointed as well. So this is a political reality. I don't know. I don't think Muhyiddin, deliberately tried to not include any non-Malays. It's just that he is saddled with this coalition. Yeah.
Thank you very much for speaking to us this morning, Ihsan. And that was Dr. Oh Ihsan, Senior Fellow at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs, talking to us about the new cabinet lineup we've been seeing. And the issue of diversity that you raised at the end, Julian, is quite an interesting one, because taking a look at this cabinet, I noticed MCA has four cabinet positions, one minister, three deputy ministers, and I think two of those deputy ministers are going to be appointed as senators.
Interesting that they have more cabinet positions than seats in the parliament.
They do, in fact. And MIC has one cabinet position as well.
Yeah, I think. But, it's like Ihsan says, right, the cabinet is a political necessity. It's also, mm-hmm. I think, one of the largest, second largest after Badawi's cabinet. I think that was the most at 90 over ministers. That was quite large.
Yes, and this comes in at 70.
Yeah, so still quite large too. But the question is, will they do their job? I mean, do we know what the KPIs are? Because there is no manifesto to this party, mm-hmm. right? So who's going to hold the ministers accountable?
Especially in the current economic situation.
Yes,
absolutely. And a lot of questions still remaining. We're going to be continuing our look at this throughout the morning. But right now, we have the 7:30 news for you, followed by Conversations with Howie Lee, economist at OCBC Bank, on the oil price war. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.